emancipating society at large from all exploitation, oppression, class distinction, and class struggle. This is Engels, preface to the Communist Manifesto, quoting Marx. Manifesto, Chapter 1, Bourgeoisie and the Proletarian, excerpt. The history of all hitherto existing societies is the history of class struggle. That is all written history. In 1837, the prehistory of society, the social organization existing previous to recorded history, was all but unknown. Since then, Hochstausen discovered common ownership of land in Russia. Mayer proved it to be the social foundation from which all Teutonic races started in history. Communism is actually the primitive way of living, and by and by, village communities were found to be, or to have been, the primitive form of society everywhere from India to Ireland. The inner organization of this primitive communistic society was laid bare in its typical form by Morgan's crowning discovery of the true nature of the gens and its relation to the tribe. With the dissolution of these primeval communities, society began to be differentiated into separate and finally antagonistic classes. The threat of nature in the earlier period of man's endeavor brought by necessity a tribal kind of communism. Thus, in these days of threat and ecology, where food is not sufficient, the man is confronted with nuclear weapons that can destroy whole human race. Communism again is brought about, must be brought out, as practical necessity. In the early epochs of history, according to the Communist Manifesto, we find almost everywhere a complicated arrangement of society into various orders, a manifold gradation of social rank. Ancient Rome, the Senate, the patricians, the earliest aristocracy, the knights, the plebeians, and slaves bear out in the early epochs of history. We find almost everywhere a complicated arrangement of society into various orders, manifold gradation of social rank. Middle Ages came monarchs, tilted aristocracy, feudal lords, vassals, guild masters, journeymen, apprentices, and serfs. Thus sprang forth the chartered burghers and earliest towns. In almost all of these classes, again, subordinate gradations are seen. The modern bourgeoisie society has sprouted from the ruins of the feudal society, has not done away with the class antagonisms. Keep trying to tune in Cuba if you can. It has but established new classes, new conditions of oppression, new forms of struggle in place of the old ones. The age of the bourgeoisie, 1800s or the 19th century, has simplified class antagonism. Society as a whole is more and more splitting up into two great hostile camps directly facing each other. Bourgeoisie and proletariat. Under feudal industry, production was monopolized by closed guilds. Manufacturing system took its place. The guild masters were pushed aside by the manufacturing middle class. Markets kept growing. Steam and machinery revolutionized industrial production. The place of the manufacturer was taken by giant modern industry. The industrial middle class was replaced by industrial millionaires and leaders of whole industrial armies, the modern bourgeoisie. We see, therefore, how the modern bourgeoisie is itself the product of a long course of development, of a series of revolutions in the modes of production and exchange, the ways of production and exchange. Each step had a corresponding political advance for that class. An oppressed class under feudal nobility, it became an armed and self-governing association in the medieval commune. Commune was a name taken in France by the nascent towns even before they had conquered from their feudal lords and masters local self-government and political rights as a third estate. England is typical of economic growth of the bourgeoisie. France is typical of the political growth of the bourgeoisie. The bourgeoisie has played a most revolutionary role in history. Wherever it has gotten the upper hand, it has put an end to all feudal, patriarchal, idyllic relations. It has pitilessly torn asunder the motley feudal ties that bound man to his natural superiors, as the brainwashing of the day would have it called, and has left no other bond between man and man than naked self-interest, than callous cash payment. It has resolved personal worth into exchange value, and in place of the numberless indefeasible chartered freedoms, has set up that single unconscionable freedom, free trade, the right to make money, or to rephrase, for exploitation veiled by religious and political illusions, it has substituted naked, shameless, direct, brutal exploitation. That has been the result of the bourgeoisie emerging in history. The bourgeoisie has torn away from the family its sentimental veil and has reduced the family relation to a mere money relationship. The bourgeoisie cannot exist without constantly revolutionizing the instruments of production and the whole relations of society. Conservation of the old modes of production in all an altered form was, on the contrary, the first condition of existence for all earlier industrial classes. The need of a constantly expanding market for its products chases the bourgeoisie over the whole surface of the globe. It must nestle everywhere, settle everywhere, establish connections everywhere. Industry no longer has national ground. Old established national industries are daily being destroyed. This has brought an interdependence of nations. It compels all nations, said Marx, in pain of extinction, to adopt the bourgeoisie ways of production. It compels them to introduce what it calls civilization into their midst, that is, to become bourgeoisie themselves. In a word, it creates a world after its own image. It has made the country dependent on towns, barbarian, on semi-barbarian countries, dependent on civilized ones, nations of peasants, dependent on nations of bourgeoisie, the East upon the West. We see then, said Marx, that the means of production and exchange, which served as the foundation for the growth of the bourgeoisie, were generated in feudal society. When feudal property law became a fetter, they were burst asunder. When feudal property laws became a fetter, they were burst asunder. A similar movement goes on now. Modern bourgeoisie society, with its relations of production, of exchange, and of property, a society that has conjured up such gigantic means of production and exchange, is like the sorcerer who is no longer able to control the power of the nether world, of the evil world, whom he has called up by his spell. For many a decade past, the history of industry and commerce is but the history of the revolt of modern productive forces against modern conditions of production, against the property relations that are the conditions of production, against the property relations that are the conditions for the existence of the bourgeoisie and of its rule. It is enough, said Marx, to mention the commercial crisis that by their periodical return put the existence of the entire bourgeoisie society on trial, each time more threateningly. In these crises, a great part, not only of the existing products, but also of the previously created productive forces, are periodically destroyed. In these crises, there break out an epidemic that, in all earlier epochs or ages, would have seemed an absurdity, the epidemic of overproduction. Society suddenly finds itself put back into a state of momentary barbarism. It appears as if a famine, a universal war, a devastation, had cut off the supply of every means of subsistence. Industry and commerce seem to be destroyed. And why? Because there is too much civilization, too much means of subsistence, too much industry, too much commerce. The productive forces at the disposal of society no longer tend to further the development of the conditions of the bourgeoisie property. On the contrary, they have become too powerful for these conditions by which they are fettered, and no sooner do they overcome these fetters than they bring disorder into the whole of bourgeoisie society and endanger the existence of bourgeoisie property. Conditions of bourgeoisie society are too narrow to comprise the wealth created by them. And how does the bourgeoisie get over these crises? On the one hand, by enforced destruction of a mass of productive forces. On the other, by the conquest of new markets, and by the more, through exploitation of the old ones. That is to say, by paving the way for the more extensive and more destructive crises, and by diminishing the means whereby crises are prevented. The weapons with which the bourgeoisie fell feudalism to the ground are now turned against the bourgeoisie itself. But not only has the bourgeoisie forged the weapons that bring death to itself, it has also called into existence the men who are to wield these weapons. The modern working class are what we call the proletarians. As capital, meaning bourgeoisie, that's what bourgeoisie is, the capital, is developed in the same proportion as the proletariat, or the working class, developed. A class of laborers who live only so long as they find work, and who find work only so long as their labor increases capital. He has become the price of a commodity. No sooner has the laborer received his wages in cash, for the moment escaping exploitation by the manufacturer, than he is set upon by the other portions of the bourgeoisie, the landlord, the shopkeeper, the pawnbrokers. All the holders of capital are the bourgeoisie. The small tradespeople gradually all sink into the proletariat. Inflation and move of industry leave them behind. Specialized skills are rendered useless by new methods of production. In the 1800s, the proletarians of the workers fought the enemies, thank you, Eva, of the bourgeoisie, the petty bourgeoisie. In the 1800s, again, I say, the proletarians or the workers fought the enemies of the bourgeoisie, the petty bourgeoisie, or remnants of the landed monarchy, the non-industrial bourgeoisie. Trade unions formed to hold against the bourgeoisie. The real fruit of the battle lies not in the immediate results, but in the exercise of expanding union of workers. Every class struggle is a political struggle. This organization of the proletarians or workers into a class and consequently into a political party is constantly being upset by the competition between the workers themselves promoted by the bourgeoisie, because there's never enough to go around due to the terrible appetite of the bourgeoisie or the holders of capital. There's always competition of the workers for jobs. When the bourgeoisie in battle with aristocracy remnants on the one hand and avenues of government on the other engages in a battle, it is forced to turn to proletariat for help. It therefore must supply the proletariat with its own elements of political and general education. In other words, it furnishes the proletariat with the weapons to fight the bourgeoisie itself. Segments of the ruling class become dethroned by others and find themselves as the growing proletariat and bring with them new means of fighting. They are amid this growing proletariat because there's such competition between those who hold capital. There's no sense of cohesiveness or unity amongst those who hold capital or the bourgeoisie. They are destructive to their own ends because of their selfish pursuit of profit. The proletariat of each country must first of all settle matters with its own bourgeoisie. Eventually, the modern labor must sink to the level of the pauper. Pauperism begins to develop more rapidly than population and wealth. And here it becomes evident that the bourgeoisie is no longer fit to be the ruling class in society and to impose its conditions of existence upon the society as an overriding law. It is unfit to rule because it is incompetent to assure an existence to its slave within his slavery, because it cannot help letting him sink into such a state that it has to feed him instead of being fed by him. The premise of the bourgeoisie. the essential condition for the existence and sway of the bourgeoisie class is the formation and augmentation of capital. The condition for capital is wage labor. Wage labor rests exclusively on competition between the laborers, because the capital holders, the bourgeoisie, are not going to share enough to give jobs for every laborer. The advance of industry, whose involuntary promoter is the bourgeoisie, replaces the isolation of the laborers due to competition by their revolutionary combination, due to association. The development of modern industry therefore cuts from under its feet the very foundation on which the bourgeoisie produces and appropriates products. What the bourgeoisie therefore produces, above all, are its own grave diggers. The fall of the bourgeoisie, the holders of capital, and the victory of the working class proletariat are equally inevitable. Tenets of socialism. These tenets, principles, belief of doctrine generally held to be true, that is the tenets of socialism. Socialism, any of various economic and political theories advocating collective or governmental people ownership and administration of the means of production and distribution of goods. A system of society, that is socialism, is a system of society or group living in which there is no private property. A system or condition of society in which the means of production, the fields here, our sawmills, all of these things that produce for us, the soap maker, are owned and controlled by the people, a people state, as we have here, a people's government, administered by the steering committee, the central committee, augmented by a principle bearer until we all have learned the socialistic mentality or communist mind, your leader, your dad. A stage of society in Marxist theory, transitional between capitalism and communism and distinguished by unequal distribution and pay according to work done. We, in a sense, are jumping through that transitional period here into the equality of communism, though there are some inequities, some who take privilege, some who are more cunning, not using their mind for general production, and helping with the general distribution on egalitarian and equalitarian standards. We still have some inequality, though it is your duty as comrades in the community of socialism that is on its road to the community of communism, it is your duty to point out these inequities constantly until we vigorously uproot from our midst all those who take advantage. In the stage of socialism, we have learned well. We have a better share. We have more sharing of the administration of goods and certainly production. We're beyond socialism, but not in pure communism, because if we were, there would be none that try to take advantage, and all would have everything alike. All leadership would be assumed in common instead of bearing so heavily upon one person and on one voice as you now hear it. All would pursue the idealism, practical idealism of communism, and exonerate it in practical demonstration. But there are elitists in our midst who take privilege for themselves, who are lazy, and confronting them could be done, but it would be necessary to do it constantly at the point of a gun. And then that may happen at some point. I wouldn't doubt that it does. When it does, then we have to be prepared for the effects on the outside, because we are not a nation. We are a community, which gives us some difficulty in pursuing communism at its highest level. We can immediately eradicate elitism, elitist tendencies here, if we were not surrounded by a socialist nation that is still struggling in a transitional stage, who have not yet been able to enforce communism for the same reasons that it's surrounded by nations that are hostile to the socialist theory and mode of production and mode of distribution. As we move on and provide enough support to this community in our doctor, our medical care, and essential trained skills to the outside community, particularly as I see it in medical care, then we can, when we've established our footing in this Northwest district, and indeed we are the most advanced in medicine, People are coming to us constantly saying they don't want to go to any other medical care centers but ours. As we establish those services in the community, then and we can take a firmer hand dealing with the elitist in our midst who want to take advantage, who will lazily pursue their own indulgences and their own anarchy. We are moving against it at a much more striking rate than we should theoretically, unless we are prepared to die. And of course, I'm always prepared to die, so I pursue it much more rapidly than the circumstances, the economy here would warrant. Some are very difficult to deal with. They're anarchists by tendency. They don't want to come to meetings. They don't want to regulate their lifestyle. They don't want to incorporate their energies with others, but they want to stand out as an isolate and look good. Those people will be summarily dealt with even before the economics would justify that being done. And as you see nightly, it is done. I take on people at risk that there will be some turmoil and upheaval that could spill out on the community. But with more and more assurances that we have, the essential need of our skilled specialist doctor, who has been the medical doctor, been praised at the highest levels of this government, needing us in this community as a buffer to Venezuelan capitalist expansionism, then that gives us a greater degree of authority. I'm talking as a pragmatist now. I, as an idealist, however, move much more rapidly at times than circumstances would allow, because communism, being equal distribution from each according to his ability to each according to his need, is my goal. So much of an impetus in my life that I can't help but pursue it idealistically at times, and will continue to do so. I cannot stand gross examples of elitism. And if you notice, I come down on any indulgence that is a gross manifestation. The immediate aim of the communists is the same as that of all the other proletarian parties, or workers' parties. Formation of the proletariat, or working people, into a class. Overthrow of bourgeoisie supremacy, those who have the rule of capital, the landlords, the industrialists, those giants that maintain the hold on oil that should be owned by the people, the hold on railroads and commerce that should be available freely to the people. Socialists and communists alike have that purpose in common, only socialists believe in a more democratic approach and a gradual approach to these matters. All property relations in the past have continually been subject to historical change consequent upon the change in historical conditions. All property relations in the past, as I said. The French Revolution, for example, abolished feudal property in favor of bourgeoisie property. There's only two classes then, the feudal owners, the ownership owned by the kingly estates, and then those, all the rest were serfs. A slave. Out of that came a kind of a middle class who needed to help the feudal landlord maintain his estate. And from that came an emergence of a middle class, of the bourgeoisie, and capital was broken down into more pockets. This is called the evolution of dialectical materialism, and it's a natural process of life, just like the evolution of human beings that came out of one cell as we came down from the monkey. The theoretical conclusions of communism merely express, in general terms, actual relations springing from an existing class struggle. The distinguishing feature of communism is not the abolition of property generally, but the abolition of bourgeoisie property. Property that's productive, that should be shared. Farms, factories, commerce of all nature. Communism doesn't essentially say that you cannot have your own home, although pure communism would essentially say that we should share everything. But the communist society of the present day is not thought to eliminate at least home and clothing and cars. There's a great deal of permissiveness for private property as long as it's not productive property. The danger is, however, when you give too much private property, it can be manipulated again to get a hold on the productive aspects of society, and someone will buy up land and buy up machinery, and again they'll become competitors against the people to hold some of the productive forces. Farms should not be held privately. Factories should not be held privately. Boat lines, ship lines, airlines, rail lines, mines should not be held privately. Those poor miners who have to risk should get the highest benefits from their mines. All property that is productive absolutely must be held in common by all the people. Much of this from my own memory, and I hope if you have any questions, you'll bring them up, jot them down if I make it too complex and not clear enough in explanation. The distinguishing feature then in this era of communism is not the abolition of property, your own clothing, your wristwatch, your house, your bedroom. Although here we've jumped beyond that, which is better, because we could all have better houses if we do share our property in common now. If we will give up our watches equally, although some don't, most do. Even teachers gave them up who needed them. Nurses have even been prone to give them up. But there are some amongst us who represent elitism above zero, who feel they can hold back on jewelry, or hold back on a watch, or special clothing. However, in this pure communist state, if we would divest ourselves of those things, we can go out and make means of production. We can get in the productive market, thus increasing our standard of living, though someday we could all own gold watches if we wanted them. Not that I would ever want one. I would not want to be encumbered by anything on my hands or wrists that I didn't need. That's certainly elitism. We'd have to be extremely careful. But what I'm saying is, if we will all sacrifice now, we can buy business, a bakery that's available to us in Georgetown. We can buy a sawmill up the river, and thus we could enhance our standard of living. We could build a modern school. We could air-condition homes if it were needed for certain people of health. We could bring in the very best of conveniences. But first, before we would do that, we would assure that our people, young and older, have the greatest opportunities of education to go to the most advanced technological societies, such as Cuba and the Soviet Union, to get the kinds of education that they want. Or, for that matter, bring in a university here and bring from Russia, bring from the Soviet world, the Marxist world, the best of educators, and build a school, the most advanced school in medicine, for instance, or the most advanced school in agriculture. I think that would probably be a better course than sending our people out until we are sure we have firmly planted the feet of communism here. And as I said, that the Soviet Union does not, and has not, only in a few instances of communal life, and China, reached China more than Russia, domestically has reached communal living. And from that communal living, China distributes its wealth amongst its people. It does not do enough with its wealth on the international scene to assure liberation around the world. China is very, very selfish. It shares all of its means of distribution, its means of production. It's held in common by its people. But it puts most of that right back into its people instead of thinking of other people around the world who are in misery. The Soviet Union does not have a strict policy of communal life, but what national wealth it does have, it shares it greatly with people like Cuba and assures victory for the forces of liberation, of socialist liberation in Africa, as it did in Angola and did in Mozambique and all up and down the length and breadth of the world. That's why we look to the Soviet Union as the best guiding example. It's not perfect, but even in the Soviet Union, there is no abolition of private property. People can own their homes up to $50,000 worth of assets, which is dangerous. But they feel, because they are surrounded by the competitors, which they cannot destroy, the competitors of nationalistic monopoly capitalism, that that will have some enticement with the age of communications, and the world is a small place, and free exchange of travel, that their people have to be given more consumerism than ordinarily, because the force of capital, monopoly capitalism that's bleeding all the colonial nations, could be stopped in a moment if it were not for the nuclear age. But the Soviet Union is very, very cautious. If it were just a technological era that had not gone so far as the nuclear age, and was nations were had only been able to achieve the ordinary mass warfare state of the World War II, then the capital would have long since been destroyed. Capitalism can't compete It can compete to the massive dedication, the many millions more in the army, for instance, the Soviet Union has, the larger population that the Soviet Union has. Then added to that, the billion Chinese, there are more people, two-thirds of the world, are communist, are socialist, on the road to communism. And thus it would be a very practical thing to eliminate capital. The United States would have long since been eliminated if it had not been for the fluke of this disordered universe that allowed the capitalists to first find the nuclear weapon, first come upon nuclear bombs. It's a miracle indeed that there was enough Soviet sentiment and Soviet subversion of the capitalist system in the high places of government that the Soviets were able to avoid the capitalists from starting a war with them. For 5 years, they had to wait before they got their bomb. The capitalists had 5 year advance on the Soviet Union or the communist world in that the USA had a nuclear bomb 5 years before the Soviet Union gained them. One of the miracles of history is that the Soviet Union was not inundated and destroyed. The capitalists made a grave error, cowardice, plus some in the State Department, perhaps in the various levels of the United States government, who were pro-Soviet. But during that 5 years, the capitalists should have wiped out the Soviet Union with their arsenal nuclear weapons. But they did not take that choice, and now they've lost their opportunity. They could never win a war. But the Soviet Union, the forces of communist change, are equally disdainful of taking the risk of starting a nuclear war, because when you're dealing with bandits, international bandits, who are made merciless by the competitive system, competition makes merciless creatures. Person puts, as I said, the family relations are nothing. No relation, even a family relationship, is boiled down to money. Nothing means a goddamn to people in the United States, in the bourgeoisie, the middle class, the controllers of capital, and even the ruling monopoly capitalists even more so. Not a goddamn thing important to them except money. So they're dangerous. They're liable to drop bombs anywhere. And the Soviet Union want to be absolutely sure that they have developed energy of mind. They're working on that now to be able to stop missiles or laser beams, to be able to be sure that they can stop all the United States missiles at one time. Otherwise, they just got to put up with some of the USA shit, because USA is liable to drop their bombs anywhere and set the world back 500 years. They know they're bandits. And that gives the capitalists a certain advantage at this moment. However, that is disappearing. The Soviet Union has taken a courageous policy to liberate portions of the world, even in spite of USA nuclear blackmail that said, get your troops out of Africa, get your advisors out of Africa, or it'll mean nuclear war. Pull back from the Near East, or it'll mean nuclear war. But the Soviet Union has carefully played a brinkmanship for the will and sake of the proletariat and the working class people of the world, and have pushed as far as they can, and I think have done bravely so, to even reach over into the Caribbean and support a communist nation right under the goddamn nose of the Yankees, only 90 miles from Florida. That took some courage and some risk. It's always risk. We have to be some of that, take some of that risk here. Confrontation, eyeball to eyeball. It's got us through thus far. When we were willing to circle this place and give our lives if necessary and tell the short wave, go to hell, we won't give up our people. We came here to be socialists. We're going to keep our land, our bluff, and our courage to back up that bluff by sacrificing our lives gave us the liberty. Hi, brother. Love my kids. Let me go on. Ready? The past dominates the present. In communist society, the present dominates the past. In bourgeoisie society, capital, money, is independent and has individuality, while the living person is dependent and has no individuality. Only the worth of the person is based on how much money he possesses. No one has intrinsic value. They talk about individualism in capitalism. There is no individualism. No one's appreciated for their individual talent, their ability. What's the fighting going on down on the porch? I would appreciate if you got time to be playing. You could take time to listen in Dorm 3, if you please. Now, but constantly the lie of the bourgeoisie, capitalists say, there is individuality in the United States. There is no individuality, because no individual is important. Only how much money they have is important. black person can never gain importance. He can gain the wealth of a section of the whole working of the means of production. And he still cannot join certain clubs, and he still will not be invited to certain parties. He will not be accepted. A black man in America can never gain individual worth. He can't even gain it if he got all the money in the bank. He's still a nigger. Only under communism is individualism encouraged. Here, you could see. Father loves you. You used to didn't know whether he loved you for your money or not. Here you know he loves you because you ain't got no money. Your fucking checks may be cut off. He does see, if he feeds you every day, he has to love you. Because some don't have any means of supporting themselves. They're seedlings. They wouldn't be able to work. You're not able to take the work in the field. You're not producing enough to feed yourself. The whole project's not producing enough. With the young people, it's not producing because we've not reached that level of productive capacity. We're still hung up with the laziness and lethargy of the capitalist system. They made us creatures of the dole. We were on welfare. We didn't want to get productive. And they kept us down by giving us a little check. Our family and our children, of those that were on welfare, were willing to take that and not get productive because there was no motivation, there was no incentive. We couldn't see any future. And we carry that shit over here. We're lazy fuckers. Half this place is filled up with lazy motherfuckers or daddy fuckers or whatever you want to call them. They're something. Lazy. And not realizing that every time that they're lazy, that they're cutting off their nose to spite their face. Cutting us all open the chance of owning a freighter. Owning a boat that would give some of these young people a chance to go to the high seas or go to the greatest institutions of learning in the world. But they're lazy motherfuckers. Because every time they don't work, they cut back their own capacity to grow. Same with seniors. You can have seniors gripe because they don't have their dog. Or they don't have a television, or they don't have this. Well, then let's get our ass to work and produce, and we can have those things. Because whatever we vote in people's rally, we can have, if that's what you want. Don't have movies, don't have this, don't have that. Want a lover? Well, you can get people interested in you if you're successful. How much chemo? You understand what I'm talking about. But you got to produce. But here you found out that Father loves you because he continues to find ways outside, takes up money that was his own, put all of his own money and sees it going out, that he could have lived on himself, that he made and saved, and sees that going away, he could have taken and run off with that money. You know he loves you because we're not producing. We have to buy our food and bring it in from the outside. We have to get our medicine and bring it in from the outside. So you know that your dad loves you. You are an individual of worth here. You know that your individuality means something here, because whether you work or don't work, dad feeds you just the same. Whether you work or don't work, dad sees that you get down to that doctor and get the best care, and the special attention of the medical staff is given as much to you who might be an invalid and senile and unable to work as is for the most productive person here, the most educated professional. There's no difference in the medical care given the professional, educated, productive person or the agricultural productive person. No difference in the medical care given that person than there is the person that's invalid. Are confined and cannot work. And some of them can't work because they're so fucking lazy they don't lose their weight. They're so goddamn fat they can't get around. But yet Father still feeds them. That probably would be indulgence because that's going beyond the realm of recognizing your individual worth. That's supporting parasitism. And the parasitical elements should be removed. So all who are heavy should be following it. But I gave some instructions about that, but I still see a lot of fat folk. We ought to be as concerned about losing the fat which cripples us and handicaps us as we are getting those who are thinner. Ability to love, that's what gains individuality. You know that. Here you come whether you have anything or not. You walk up and Dad gives you the same piece of candy as he gives the doctor, gets the same piece of candy as the senior who cannot work. You follow what I'm saying? Individuality, love. Beauty of communism, worth to die for. The tenets of socialism are not only worth living for, they're worth dying for. Otherwise, we're nothing but a goddamn bunch of jungle creatures, street animals that are not worthy of breath in our... We're less worthy of breath than the monkeys, because the monkeys have a socialist kind of cooperation. The fucking anthill has a socialist cooperation. There's a level of cooperation amongst the ants. But humans without socialism are the worst creature on earth. They destroy everybody else. They destroy all other forms of life. They wreck the environment. They wreck nature. And they wreck all other forms of animal life. Without communism, they're the worst goddamn monster that ever was born. Some are horrified at our intending to do away with private property. But in our existing society, private property is already done away with. Shit, you didn't own anything back there. 9/10 of the population doesn't own a goddamn thing in the United States. Its existence... for the few is solely due to its non-existence in the hands of the other 9/10 or 90% of the population. Some reproach us, therefore, with intending to do away with a form of property, the necessary condition for whose existence is the non-existence of any property for the immense majority of society. Indeed, those who prefer to losing individual property mean loss of the property of no other person than the middle class. Chip, you've got nothing to lose but your chains. Say, I lost something back there. I give up this idea. You'd have nothing. Silly ass bitch fussing about things she gave up. Already in 4 months being here, that silly ass bitch, 4 or 5 months being here, she got more money than her stinking property was worth. Medical care and father's power that brought her through a stroke the other night. When the hell are you going to pay for that? How are you going to get anybody to do that? She'd have died in her fucking bed. Nobody looked after her. Now she gets food delivered to her and medical people checking her regularly. Over there under the pavilion, you're being checked regularly. Where the fuck can you buy that? Yeah, I'll give so much. You've already spent what you give, honey. It's already been used up. It costs better than $1,000 U.S. a month just to keep you, not to provide all the protection. That's worth $1 million. So you didn't lose nothing. Nobody loses anything when capitalism goes down except that fucking middle class, that petty bourgeoisie, the holders of capital, the landlord class. They're the ones that lose. You weren't in that class. You didn't own shit. You were paying on your house. The bourgeoisie family. Let's go back now. This person... Indeed, those who refer to losing individual property mean loss of the property of no other person than the middle class. Owners of property, this person must indeed be swept out of the way and made impossible. These people who play games, the Uncle Toms for capitalists, they got to be swept out, along with those who own property and won't share it. Communism deprives no man or woman of the power to appropriate the products of society. All that it does is to deprive him of the power to subjugate the labor of others, to make slaves out of others, like the white man did the black man, by means of such appropriation of power. God, you ought to be glad to get out from under that shit where you were a slave for the man all the time. Bourgeoisie ideas are but the outgrowth of the condition of bourgeoisie production and bourgeoisie property, just as bourgeoisie jurisprudence is but the will of the upper classes made into law for all, and further supporting the exploitation of the proletariat. The courts, you say, well, some woman talked of last night, the courts would give fairness. Now, they never give fairness. They never give fairness to the black. Shit, they put the black in jail for stealing a loaf of bread and let Nixon go free when he steals a fucking nation. There is no equality. There's no justice. Fuck their courts. That's why I was upset with the woman wanting to look to the court system of the United States that showed lack of communist enlightenment. Everything in the United States is made for the purposes of the ruling class. The courts never sentence no son of a bitch that steals from black people or robs lands and takes mines and causes people to die like that fucking rich owner of all those nursing homes in New York, that Jewish rabbi. Millions and millions of people, millions of dollars he took away and hundreds of lives that died because of his terrible practices, and the fucker gets sentenced to the 9th floor of a hotel. And he gets his servants provided for, black at that. And he gets to go out all day long as he's in by 11 o'clock at night. Now, what kind of shit is that? That shows you that even the court system, The bourgeois jurisprudence is but the will of the upper ruling monopoly honky made into law for all and further supporting the exploitation of the worker, the proletariat. In its completely developed form, the family exists only among the bourgeoisie. We never were allowed to have a family. They killed off our dads at an early age, and our mothers at an early age. We niggers never had a family. You talk about your family. Fuck your family. Never existed. Only the rich were entitled to have a family and protect their family institution. You lost nothing but your chains when you left the United States. I keep telling you, but some don't realize it. It's completely developed form. The family exists, as I said, only amongst the captains of the bourgeoisie. This state of things finds its complement in the practical absence of the family among the proletarians and in the commonly practiced public prostitution. Some of we mothers here have to give their bodies. You notice I said we, because I am you and you are me. Some of our mothers had to give their bodies. One lady was telling me, young woman, just a little not long ago, Sister Cheryl, what she had to go through, dope and prostitution to survive. What the fuck? You had no family. You had to give your bodies. Even married mothers who are black have to go out and fuck on the side to feed their children. God damn, such a miserable system. You ought to hate that fucking system. Now, because some people, last night in the moment of serenity, I said, who misses the United States? Now we had a whole series of people acting out today. I said, those won't be in any way reprimanded because they were telling the truth. They didn't say they loved the system. They missed some of their loved ones. Well, they need to look at their loved ones, too, and see that their loved ones can get here. If they write them and tell them how beautiful it is, it's not their fault if their loved ones don't come. Their loved ones love that system and are more Uncle Toms and Aunt Janes than they are socialists. If you say, come, of no money, no price, if you want to come, Father will make a way, then it's their own goddamn fault, and you shouldn't put your fucking family above the family of this humanity called Father's family. You never had a family until Father adopted you. Your fucking dads and moms screwed over you, fucked over you, made you worship them, and they brought you in this fucking world as pawns to make them look like more of a he-man, or the lady more of a woman. What if they'd loved you, they wouldn't have brought you here. I loved you because I adopted you and I take care of you, and your fucking daddy and mama screwed around and brought you into this torture chamber. So fuck your mom and daddy and mine too. I don't love my mama because she brought me into the earth. I hated her for that. I loved her because she was willing to stand up for me so you could be saved. You follow what I'm saying? Well, it's hard to get that across some of these folks. Hard. Well, I think I'm getting communism down to a practical level. Some of you understanding it a little better? Some of you. Hope so. We'll go over it again and again. As we were speaking, abolition of the family, they say, is another communist proposal. In its completely developed form, the family exists only among the bourgeoisie. The state of things finds its complement in the practical absence of the family, as I said, among workers. They're killed off before they ever get a chance to be a family. And the commonly practiced public prostitution that has to be done by blacks and poor white workers to even live. Indeed, the communists seek to stop the exploitation of children by their parents. Sure we do. Communism would introduce community women and do away with the status of women as mere instruments of production. Our bourgeoisie, not content with having the wives and daughters of their proletarians at their disposal, not to speak of common prostitutes, take the greatest pleasure in seducing each other's wives. You notice that back there in the States. So where is the fucking family? But in the possessive, selfish state of mind. The family is in fact existent only in the realm of commodity production. That's all it means. Dollar relationships. What you can do for my ego. What the husband does for the woman's ego, the woman does for the husband's ego. It's not love. Bourgeoisie marriage is in reality a system of wives in common. And thus at the most, what the communists might possibly be reproached with is that they desire to introduce in substitution for a hypocritical, concealed, and openly legalized community of women. We want community. We want freedom from those old...